Hello and welcome. It's Friday. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. And we're back. It's a brand new episode, plus a very creepy theater of the mind coming up in a little bit for you. I hope that you enjoyed the last two episodes as we did special throwback episodes and in honor of Guy Lyon Playfair, who passed away on April 8th, the original investigator, one of the two original investigators of the Enfield poltergeist case. So if you missed them, make sure you go back and check them. On Monday, we did our supernatural news segment, and then with the obituary for Guy Lyon Playfair, ran right into part one of a three-hour interview. So you got to hear part one on Monday, the anatomy of a poltergeist, yesterday, Wednesday, the Enfield poltergeist case, as we deconstructed it and talked about it with Guy, and then that was his final appearance on Darkness Radio. So it's sad that we lost him, but I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. Tonight, you might not want to listen to this before bed. Tonight, we're going to talk Supernatural Assault, Terror from the Shadows, which is a new documentary by Paul Tate. He has been reading, observing, and researching many aspects of the paranormal world since his early childhood, and his fascination of the unknown began as far back as 1976 and stemmed from the strange and truly frightening experiences he, as a young boy, had while living in his native country of England. He's here with us tonight again to share some information and knowledge. Welcome back to the show, Paul. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate the invite, and I'm looking forward to giving your listeners a great show tonight.
Well, let's start off, since your encounters, your dealings with the supernatural began with a lot with what we're going to talk about tonight. Talk to us a little bit about your experiences, and how old were you when you started having them?
Well, the very first incident I had was in 1976. Me and my parents moved into an apartment. We called them flats back in England. And this was built over an old block of street houses that were flattened during World War II by German bombers. And this apartment, when we, you know, went into it, it had a strange, eerie feeling, but, you know, nothing unusual, just a bit cold and chilly. And I had a room right at the end of the house, or sorry, the apartment, and my parents were way down, you know, about 20 feet away from me. And I used to be sleeping at night, and I would wake up at night, and I would look up, and I would see this tall, shadowy looking figure, you know, staring down at me. It'd just be looking at me, wouldn't say a word. And that was the creepiest part about it. It just stared at me. So I used to cover my head and scream. And my mom would come running into me, and she'd get me, you know, say, what's going on? And I would try to tell her as much as I could that this thing is in my room. So this went on and on for months. In the end, I stopped sleeping in that room, and I started sleeping in with my parents. So we moved out of that house. And let me just go back to the description of this thing. It was a tall, dark, shadowy figure, and it looked to me, laying in my bed looking up at it, like it had an afro hairdo. It was like a round shaped head. So I thought it was just a tall figure with an afro. This was the 70s, you know, that was the hip thing to have back then.
Right.
Yeah. So we moved out anyway, and my family, my cousins moved in. They took the apartment over. And the strange part about that whole thing, I reconnected with one of my cousins who actually had my very bedroom. I reconnected with him about 6 months ago on Facebook, and we spoke about our old apartment. And I said to him, his name's Leon. I said, Leon, I said, when you moved into my bedroom, I said, did you ever see anything strange? And he said to me, why are you saying that? He got a bit, you know, hyped up and a bit anxious about it. He says, why are you asking me that? And I said to him, I just want to know, because I just, you know, I saw some things in that room. And I never said nothing to him, Dave. But the first thing out of his mouth was, during a lot of the nights that I slept in that room, he said a dark, tall, shadowy figure with a hat used to appear in his bedroom and stare at him. Same thing that I saw in that same apartment. Mm. And I never even told him what I saw. But this was about 6 months ago. We reconnected on Facebook, and that was his side of the story, and mine, they kind of match. So that was my first kind of experience with the paranormal. Didn't know nothing then about shadow people or anything. I was too young. Anyway, I just carried on with life, went to school and done everything that kids do. And then I started working up at Scotland Yard in the 80s. And
Can I take you back for 1 second, Paul? I want to hear the next part of your story, but I want to discuss this moment for you. And if you'd be so kind to indulge me and just kind of close your eyes and kind of imagine yourself back in that bedroom and seeing this tall, dark, shadowy figure. Now, when you remember seeing it, was it a true sense of terror that you got from it? Or did you get over that sense of terror? Was it more of just kind of a shock to see something in your room? Was there really a sense of fear and dread as though it meant you harm? Or were you just more surprised by the element of it being there?
I think it was frightening to me because obviously I didn't know what it was. I knew it wasn't my mum and I knew it wasn't my dad. And you couldn't see the face, mm-hmm. but you knew it was staring down at you. So it was frightening in the aspect that it wasn't saying anything, but it was just staring at you. And I didn't know what to make of it. Obviously I was just too young to know, but it frightened me enough that I wouldn't sleep in that room. I mean, I used to dread going to bed and I used to be scared. And then in the end, I was kept out of that room. My parents kept me in their bed with them until we moved out. We only stayed in that house about a year. So
would it move at all? Would it be in different parts of your room on different nights, or was it always in the same place?
It was always right beside my head. I used to lay, and I still to this day sleep, laying on my left side, and I was laying on my left side looking towards the window, and it would appear right beside my head, just standing there. And when I looked up as a kid, this thing was towering way over me. It must have been, 5.5-6 feet tall, and I'm at kid bed level, so I must be down about 24 inches off the ground. So it looked huge.
Did it make sound? Could you hear the rustling of clothing, fabric? Could you hear it breathing? Was there any kind of audible activity that associated with this being?
No, it was just absolute silence and just staring. It was just an intense stare. And I couldn't see the eyes, but I knew it was looking down at me. And
It was that sense that it was staring at you.
Yeah, and its hands were in the hands were joined and they were over its lower abdomen. Like it was almost in a, like a prayer-like position, its hands. So they were joined, but it was that intense staring, I think, that freaked me out. And you know what? To this very day, I'm 48 years old now, and I will not sleep to this day without my head covered. I cover my head with a pillow because of that event. I don't want anything looking at me when I'm sleeping.
Was there any smell associated with it? Sometimes people will talk about a sulfuric smell or an acidy smell, something that went along with the actual visual representation of the being.
Yeah, there was nothing that I can recall. No smell, no sound, just that.
And how many times of seeing it before your parents said, just sleep in our room, Paul?
It probably went on for quite a while. It was like, it was like a month or so, maybe a month or, 6 weeks. It seemed like forever. But in the end, they just got tired of getting up in the middle of the night, coming to get me. And I was just, my mom, she'll tell you to this day how terrified I was at seeing that thing in my room.
Have you ever asked her as an adult if she had any experiences in that apartment that she's willing to talk to you about now?
Well, me and my mom speak about this stuff all the time. And no, she didn't have any experiences in that place, but she has had weird stuff happen to her, during her life, but not in that particular apartment. She had nothing happen to her there It was just me. I seemed to be the one that it was looking at, the one that it wanted to come and visit, and I don't know why it picked me.
Now, that's what I was going to ask, Paul. Why do you think it was there for you? Do you remember having a lot of dreams as a child where you felt like you were flying or you might have been leaving your own body?
Yes, the flying dreams, I still have them. I still have them now. I used to have dreams when I was a kid that I was always flying, flapping. You could flap your arms in dreams and just take off. I don't know. It's like almost like a bird. But I always had dreams where I was flying. That's something, amazing that you said that, because that is a dream that I used to have constantly.
Here's the reason I ask. And I'm fascinated by this because I've spoken to so many people like you have regarding shadow people activity. And a lot of people will tell me that they would wake up to see these shadowy figures in their room, but they would eventually roll over and just go back to sleep. And they said that it stood there almost sentinel, almost like it was a guardian. And you mentioned something intriguing to me. Its hands were folded as though it was almost praying. And I think, Paul, we are at our most vulnerable while we sleep, and our soul is traveling outside the body. And I often wonder if these beings are watchers that are there to protect us, to keep other entities from entering the body while we're gone. And the reason I bring something like that up, Dr. Andrew Nichols from the American Association of Paranormal Investigations, he tells a very chilling story about astral projecting, being out of his body and then coming back up the stairs, and he's floating over himself when his eyes open, and his eyes were jet black and the lips curled back and it smiled at him, his own body.
Oh, wow.
And I wonder if sometimes these beings are there as a form of protection for us, to kind of watch over us or see what happens, not necessarily meaning harm, which I understand your documentary talks about the supernatural assault of some of these beings and where they may come from. But do you think there might be, for lack of a better term, different races of shadow people and what their intention is about?
It's possible. I mean, it's a very good question. And it's interesting you said that, because I have heard that before, that when you astral project, leave your body at night and go wherever you go, that there are watchers that will come and, you know, make sure that nothing bad happens to you. I've heard that. And in fact, I interviewed a psychic when I did my documentary, Your Worst Nightmare, that we did a radio show on years ago. And she actually said that same thing. And she said that when you have the astral projection, sometimes when you wake up and you see this entity on, you know, crawling back over you in a shadow form, she said that that could be yourself returning, you know.
Right. And that is something, because especially tied in with, you know, that kind of nightmare feeling of sleep paralysis. I often wonder if that moment when you wake up, your eyes pop open, and you sense something approaching you, which a lot of people feel, is there's this weird sense of dread as though something's approaching them that they cannot see. And there's this panic. And we know that, and I think we've talked about it before, that there is a neurological condition that can cause sleep paralysis. And then that doesn't discount all of them as being part of a supernatural occurrence. But I often wonder how many of those moments when we have that panic set in, is it because, in a sense, we're bilocating? We are physically coming into consciousness while our soul is closing in on returning. So that sense that we're feeling, that thing coming towards us, is part of our own attachment, part of our own spirit or soul that's coming back to the body, and why things feel so strange. And then there's that heavy pressure, and then we're finally able to kind of breathe and get it back. Isn't it intriguing that there very well could just be an alignment that it is our soul that's approaching us that gives us that panicky feel? And maybe part of the panic is the physical form is aware that there's nothing in it. You know, the spirit form is aware that it's approaching the body. And if it sees the eyes open in it, your physicality is awakened quicker than the soul is able to return, much like with what happened to Dr. Andrew Nichols. Was it you know, his soul trying to re-enter his body that alerted this physical form, or what? It's just, there's so many questions. I wish we had detailed answers. And I know you guys cover a lot of this in your documentaries, which we're going to get into in a few moments. But let's go back to, you started to say in the 1980s, things started to really change for you. What was that moment and what was going on for you? That first one was 76 when you were a young boy. 76. And, and then where do we go from there into the 80s, as you started to tell me?
Yeah, well, I was working up at Scotland Yard there, and we had somebody came round one evening, or, you know, we were almost finished work, and they came around with this clipboard and said, there's a paranormal tour. Is anybody interested in signing up for it? It'll be a fun night out. So a few of my friends, my work colleagues, put their names down, and I said, hey, what the heck? I put mine down. I was, you know, into that type of stuff back then. Ghost hunting didn't really, you know, the stuff you see on TV now wasn't on TV then. It was just, you just saw movies from Hollywood. That was it. So I thought, yeah, I'll go check it out. So the night came and we went down to the pub. It was just down the street, had a few drinks. And then the coach pulled up, which is like a big Greyhound bus. And we all got on board. There was like 50 odd people. And we went off on this tour. And this tour guide was on the bus, you know, telling us all these creepy stories, getting us all hyped up all the way. And we stopped at a few places along the way and saw nothing. And then the night, you know, grew nearer, and it was dark by the time we got to this place called Chislehurst Caves. And they're a set of caves that are carved out of chalk. They're 11 miles under the ground, and they're pretty notorious for activity down there. So we went into the caves, and the guide for the actual cave center is the one that took us down there, and we all had these lanterns. So we were down in the caves, and the guide said, down in these caves, there are zero light photons. So at the time, I didn't really know what they were talking about, but they explained to us what light photons were. And he said that we're going to show you what it's like to be in absolute blackness. So he said, everybody on the count of three, turn off your lamps. And we did. And I've said this before, the only way to describe this is as if somebody has taken the eyes and plucked them out of your head and switched off all of your visual sensory system. It's gone. And you're standing there and you can't even see anything, nothing. So that was pretty impressive as it was. And then we turned our lamps back on and proceeded down the cave. And we ended up in this part of the cave where there was an old well shaft that went up to the surface. And I was standing at the back of the group, and everybody was looking towards the guide who was telling the stories and the history about this cave and the well shaft. And then I had a strange sense, you know, there was something behind me to turn around. So I turned around, and when I looked down the cave, about 30 feet down the cave from me, I saw these orange embers, which almost looked like somebody was dragging on a cigarette. And there was one ember at the top, and then two at the bottom, which looked like a triangular formation. So I'm looking at them, and then they start to spin anti-clockwise very slowly, and then they started to speed up. So I saw there was a lady standing next to me, and I tapped her on the shoulder, and she was from Germany, I found out afterwards. But I said to her, take a look at that. What's that? So we're both looking down the cave with our lamps, and we're holding these lamps up, looking down the cave, and these lights start to spin faster and faster, and then all of a sudden, they stop dead. And one light goes up about 9 feet in the air to sort to the top of the ceiling, and then the two bottom ones go down as if it opened up. And from the center of this triangle jumped this small humanoid shadow. It was a black shadow. It looked like a man in a diving suit, you know. It was skin tight, and we just looked at each other like, what the heck is that? So we both looked back at the shadow, and it was just standing there in a crouched position. And it was looking around the environment as if it couldn't see us. That was the strange part of it. We could see it, but it was acting as if it couldn't see anything at all. But it was just examining the environment around it. So at that point, the German lady let out this loud scream. And when she screamed, the shadow being, the shadow person, it turned really quickly and it looked directly at us, and then it turned to its left and it ran straight through that chalk wall, just went like disappeared into it as if the chalk wall didn't exist to it. And I was like in astonishment. I just looked at her and I said, what the hell? And she was still panicking. I went down the cave to see if I could see anything like projection systems or something that could have caused this. And I saw nothing. And by this time, everybody had come towards this lady. And then I went back and explained, because she was in no state to explain what she had just seen. I explained what we both just witnessed. And the tour guide said that that had been seen down in those caves by a number of people. So he told us, when we go up to the front desk, ask for the logbook. And when, you know, what we do with the logbook is to fill in our experience, our name and address. And then when the logbook was presented to us, it was quite thick. It was like, you know, it looked like about an inch thick of all these things that had happened in that, you know, set of caves over the years. And so we both filled out our experience one line after the other, and then we exchanged addresses. I never heard from her again, but she said she wanted my address just so if any of her friends thought that she was crazy, she could write to me for confirmation of what we both saw. But I never heard from her again, and that was the experience that turned me on to these things now known as shadow people. And I never heard that term until many years after. But what at was, the time, I didn't know what it was.
What was your sense at that moment? Was that a sense of awe and like you were seeing something for the first time in your life? Or was it kind of terrifying to see something like that occur, not only just in front of you where, you know, if you were alone, you could be questioning your own sanity, but that there was somebody yes. else witnessing the same thing? Explain to listeners who have not had that experience what that is like.
It's almost like an unreal feeling. It's almost like, did I really just see that? You know, you just can't fathom. You just can't fathom what you've just seen. You just, you know, I was in doubt. I was actually doubting that I saw it. I said, did I really see that? But for a week after that, really a week after that, I didn't sleep right. I was actually a bit spooked to go to sleep because I thought, if I could see that thing down there, what, it could appear anywhere. You know, but it did. It sort of jarred my sense of reality. I wasn't sure whether it was real, what I'd just seen, and I was hoping that it was some projection. But another side to me said, I know what I saw, and we both saw it. So it must, we you know, I don't know what it was, but we definitely saw something. And the description of what I saw was exactly what we both witnessed. So I could only say, you know, in my mind, I thought at the time I was both scared and confused at the same time of what I just seen. So
understandable.
As time went by, the fear goes, but now it turns to curiosity. You want to know what that was, you know?
All right, our guest, Paul Tate, we're discussing shadow people, his own personal encounters with these creepy beings. I've had shadow people encounters at places like Rolling Hills where I watch them walk between rooms right in front of my eyes. I walked through, or I should say, a shadow person walked through me through the hallowed and haunted halls of Waverly Hills Sanitarium. So many people seem to see these beings, and everybody seems to have kind of a different aspect of this. Well, our guest Paul Tate has put together a documentary, Supernatural Assault, Terror from the Shadows. And we'll put up a link to that as well. You can check it out at darkelementfilms.com. That link will be right on today's show tag, so it's much easier for you to find. But Paul, let's start to talk about what made you decide to start to investigate this for your next documentary. Why was this so important for you?
Well, this was an accident, really. What happened was when Your Worst Nightmare, which was a documentary film made on sleep paralysis back in 2008, was made, we were interviewing people who suffered from sleep paralysis, obviously, for that documentary. And during the interview process, a large number of these people were telling us that they were all seeing these shadowy entities in the room during sleep paralysis. Some of them actually saw the entities crawling up on top of them. Some were physically assaulted by them. Some saw them in different forms in the room, which we can discuss in a bit. And then there was just this constant, you know, descriptor, this matching descriptor from all these people that never even knew each other of these same entities. And I said, I'm going to keep all these interviews because this could be a whole nother documentary. So we went on and released that documentary about sleep paralysis and touched briefly on shadow people. We didn't make it the main focus of the documentary, but then we were supposed to release that shortly after, but you know, life happens and things happen. And, you know, now I've got a son and, you know, we had families. And then it was last year I decided, hey, I'm going to do something finally with those interviews. So I started to recapture the tapes and I started to compile all of the interviews. And I found that I had a lot of information, a lot of material, enough to make an entire documentary. So that's how this Shadow People documentary came to be. It was a sheer accident, just from these people reporting seeing these entities in their rooms.
Paul, and we know that a lot of times people that become prone and open to paranormal experiences start to have more paranormal experiences. Did you have any concern, since you had already had some terrifying experiences with these beings, were you worried that by picking at that scab, by doing this documentary, doing deeper research, talking to more people, this might draw their attention to you again?
Yeah, it was always a concern because I've heard that before. And it's funny enough, during the making of this documentary, like the editing process, I'd be down sitting right in this chair that I'm sitting in now in my studio. And I would see black flashes go past I've got a double French doors to the right hand side of me, and I'd see these black flashes go by, and then the hairs would stand up on my neck. And this would be late at night, you know, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, oh, here we go again, you know. And I shut everything down and I go to bed. I just can't sit there feeling like I'm being watched by something. I never actually saw anything like I did before in the caves, but I just see these almost at the corner of your eye, just swoosh past the room. And that's the only thing I've ever seen as far as things, you know, maybe coming to me. I don't know if it's just my imagination or tired eyes, but that was quite creepy when it happened.
How do you remain subjective when you're doing a documentary like this and you've had your own experiences? You know, a lot of documentaries, the narrator, the kind of journalist that's putting this together, tries to stay on the objective side. Was it hard to do because you already knew that this phenomena existed?
It was very hard because I've had my experiences and I saw what I saw. So to me, although I don't have a way to prove this and science doesn't have a way to disprove it, I mean, all I can do is present the evidence. I can present the people's testimonies, their stories, their experiences, and the viewers can make, you know, of it what they will. I can't tell people what to believe because I can't bring them a shadow person. We call them jinn, shadow people. I can't bring one in a bottle and say, here, this is proof, this is absolute proof. So the best I can do is to formulate a documentary that basically talks about this process or this phenomena from the perspective of the people who have the experiences. And then I obviously put forward some of my ideas in there that I think could be causing this, and let the audience make of it what they will. That's all I can do.
Now, Paul, I want to discuss with you, you've spoken to a lot of experts, a lot of researchers in the field about these entities and what they could be. So I do want to start to cover some of those aspects of what it is that we may be dealing with. Are we dealing with just shadows of the past, those time remnants, like in a time loop? Are we dealing with demonic entities? Are we dealing with alien encounters? We're going to discuss that and more with our guest, the creator of the documentary, Mr. Paul Tate. But before we do that, it's time to kick open the doors to the Dark Hives. We've got a very chilling story for you tonight. In tonight's Theater of the Mind, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow People know. In this week's Theater of the Mind, Barry Schulte's real-life encounter with smoke and mirrors. I was an outsider from a very early age. My parents had died in a horrible car wreck when I was 3. I was the sole survivor, and I was brought to live with my grandparents. They, however, lived in a funeral home. My grandpa was the town mortician. So, as you can assume, growing up, it was like being a member of the Addams Family without all the laugh tracks. My grandparents were very loving and very kind, but extremely protective of their personal lives and business. I was never allowed to have friends sleep over. I was never allowed to go into the basement where my grandfather attended to his business and embalming our frequent guests. Grandma would always handle the makeup and hair duties. As sun would set in our quiet little town, they would walk around the house placing black cloths over every mirror throughout our house. They said it was a practiced ritual from way back, but never explained why or what it meant. I never thought to question it and rationalized it from an early age that it must have had something to do with cushioning the mirror against the wall as we lived close by a local train track, and as freight trains would come barreling down the tracks past our house, you could always feel a slight rumble, and the windows and mirrors and pictures would all tremble and tap against the walls. When I was around 12, my grandfather, who was getting up there in age at about 77, remained diligent about the family rules and rituals, but it got harder for Grandma, as her arthritis had gotten bad and she couldn't get around as easily. Many times I would wake up to the sounds of her gentle sobs and my grandpa trying to reassure her she would be fine. On this night, the only night in my memory this happened, my grandparents did not make their way into my room to say goodnight. I eventually fell asleep and woke to the sound of the mirror on my wall trembling, its light tapping alerting me of an oncoming train. I turned over in my bed and noticed that the glass of water I kept there was not trembling. It was still. But the mirror was gently tapping the wall. My eyes began to adjust to the darkness, and I could swear I could see a silhouette of a man in the mirror, solid and black. I scanned my room looking for the culprit that cast this ominous shadow, but couldn't find anything that looked even remotely like a person's shape. I turned my eyes back to the mirror and noticed that it was now completely black, and I couldn't see any reflection at all. But the mirror continued to shake and knock about the wall. That's when I saw what I can only describe as a black, inky smoke pour forth from the mirror. It was silent. The mirror had stopped its rattling, and all I could hear was the sound of my own heartbeat pulsing in my ears. The smoke hovered above and in front of my dresser and the mirror that it poured forth from. Then it steadily began stretching, reaching toward the floor, taking on a very human-shaped presence. I don't remember breathing during any of this. I lay there silent, afraid to move, afraid to breathe or even blink my eyes. It was just the sound of my heartbeat that kept me company, and it was beginning to speed up. Once it fully formed, I noticed that it was facing the mirror it had just come from. There, reflected in the mirror, around eye level, were two red glowing embers. Now, it's important to take note, I could not see the glowing or the eyes from behind the shape, just in the reflection of the mirror. That's when I finally let out a gasp. I couldn't believe my eyes. When I gasped, it turned slowly to face me, and the glowing eyes vanished from the mirror's reflection, and were now steadily staring in my direction. I bit down hard on my lower lip and slowly dragged the blankets up to my face. The thing stood there. From my vantage point, I would say it was almost 7 feet tall, as its head seemed very close to the ceiling in my room. All I could do was lay there and whimper. I wanted to scream, but nothing would come out but a muddied-sounding, muffled cry.
Please help me. Okay, please help me. Please help me. Okay, please.
I kept trying to call to my grandparents, and slowly, the voice began to return. I kept getting louder and louder until I finally barked out a shrill,
"Help!"
The sound of my grandparents' bedroom door opening and someone shuffling down the hall grabbed both of our attention. It spun its head around toward the door and with a strange cry of its own, dispersed into a cloud like a mass that spilled to the floor and shot under my bed. Grandpa pushed open the door, shotgun in hand, thinking we had an intruder. He flipped my light switch on and, with a puzzled look on his face, asked me what was going on. I couldn't answer. I just stammered and I said, "It must have been a nightmare." It was then that he turned around and I heard him grumble, Oh, no. God damn it. And with that, he threw the cover over my mirror and shuffled out of my room, turning the light off on his way. I lay there for a few more minutes, still barely able to breathe, trying to calm my nerves. I knew what I saw, but still couldn't believe it, and with every passing minute, my nerves were more steady as I assured myself it was just a dream. I leaned over the bed and took a deep breath to assure myself there was nothing under my bed. I took my breath. I held it and leaned over and stared into the dark void beneath my bed. I let out a relieved sigh, and then I saw the eyes under my bed open, deep, glowing red embers. I'm sure my eyes grew as big as record albums, and then I felt the rush. Something cold, tingly, and forceful blew past me with the sound of a roaring wind. It surrounded my head as it passed by. I heard the floor creak and then the opening and slamming of my bedroom door. I sat upright, climbed quickly under my covers with my knees to my chest, and I began to weep. The next morning, I woke up to the mournful cry of my grandfather, sobbing and crying out loud.
No! No! No, please, no!
During the night, sometime after Grandpa had left my room, Grandma suffered a massive stroke and died immediately in her sleep. We laid Grandma to rest and returned home. Grandpa stayed strong. He greeted and comforted all the mourners that passed through our house that day. When night fell, he came to my room and shocked me with the following line of questions.
That night, what did you think you saw? What did it do? Where did it go?
I told my grandfather my story. His shoulders slumped and his head dipped lower and lower as he soaked in the encounter. He gave me a long embrace, and as he passed my mirror, he placed the cloth over it. He then turned and said,
"This is your job now. Grandma's gone, but it's very important you cover these mirrors every night at nightfall."
I tried to ask why. He turned and said,
"Because that is what we do. Now do it."
I found out later by visiting the library in town that funeral homes would often cover mirrors, believing spirits or souls could travel through them and enter our world. And with all the death we had come through our home, I had a better understanding of the superstition. I'm often left wondering, did the vision I have, that silent intruder that slipped into my room, have a hand in taking my grandma's life? To this day, even though I haven't lived in a funeral home for years, I still cover every mirror in my house. And sometimes, before drifting off to sleep, I still wonder, what if? Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Hey, get off your ass, get off the couch, stop letting life go by you, become part of the action, and join me this September when I return to Romania. It's time to go back and hunt Vlad the Impaler. We're going to see four of the castles associated with him and get to investigate two of them. We're going to start off in the Hoia Baisu Forest, which is known as the Bermuda Triangle of Romania. There are ghosts, creatures, and aliens. All of them have been sighted and seen, UFO activity and more, and we're going to be able to go investigate it for a nighttime investigation. How would you like to get off your ass and join me? You can do it real simply. Go to darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. And click on the banner for the Dracula Tour and make sure that you join me, because it is going to be the adventure of a lifetime. This will be my last trip to Romania. We are trying to do different foreign trips every year. I wanted to go back one more time and experience the beauty of Romania with you guys. So join me. We've only got about five or six spots that still remain open. So hurry up, sign up for it now. And I promise you, you are going to have the adventure of a lifetime. Go check it out for yourself at darknessradio.com. Click on the events tab or go to darknessevents.com and click directly on the Romania trip banner that you'll find there. Plus, at darknessevents.com, you can find all the great ways you can see me, meet me, and hang out with me throughout the year at all the great locations we're going to be a part of. We're back. Paul Tait is our guest this evening. He is the creator of a documentary called Supernatural Assault, Terror from the Shadows. And we've been discussing some of the different types of shadow people. And the Hat Man is certainly one of the most popular. But let's start to break it down from the people you've spoken to. And I know you've talked to our good friend Rosemary Ellen Guiley and some of the other experts out there. What are some of the common beliefs of what these creatures or these beings are?
Well, a lot of the people we spoke to seem to all be in the same belief system of these things. They, you know, Rosemary thinks that these things are jinn. And there's a Islamic scholar that we interviewed called Yasir Kidi, who also, you know, believes that these are the jinn. So I had made that sort of connection years ago, and I spoke about this before on another show that back in 2003, I had written a short script for a film idea, and it was called Invasion of the Djinn. I never actually did anything with it, but during the research for that, that's where I kind of made the connection by reading a lot of people's stories and posts on the internet, research on the internet and stuff. And maybe some other people had suggested that, but I kind of made that connection for myself that I believed that the shadow people and the djinn were the same entity. And that is kind of where the documentary goes. It looks at the connection between the shadow people and the djinn and goes into the ancient history of the djinn and then shows how they are connected to the shadow people.
Well, can you talk to us about that? Talk to me about the djinn and catch people up. I know we've done shows in the past on it, but we've got a lot of new listeners that are constantly picking up the show. What is the djinn?
So the word djinn is a verb. From the Arabic language, it means to hide or to conceal. So these entities are hidden normally from mankind. They're supposed to emanate from the world of the unseen. And if you go back into the law, even predating the Islamic religion, these entities were supposedly made from a scorching, smokeless fire, and they inhabited the earth before mankind. So in the beginning, there were angels and jinn, and that's all there was. And then mankind came along in the form of Adam. And this is according to the law, and the djinn were asked by God to bow down to Adam, to man, and they refused. The leader of the djinn, his name was Iblis, refused to bow down because he believed that the djinn were superior to mankind, and he was not going to bow down, nor his race of beings were not going to bow down to something that was inferior to them. So this caused a lot of problem. And they were cast out. They were banished from what we know as this reality to an alternate reality. And this is all according to the law on the djinn. So the djinn are not too happy about this. And this could be the root of some of the problems that we see now. You know, these vengeful attacks, this constant theme of revenge, of vengefulness. And It's the same in the Islamic culture. They speak of the exact same things as some of the researchers that I've spoken to, and they firmly believe that the djinn are a race of supernatural beings that do exist, and they're as real as us, but they exist on another frequency just beyond our perception.
It sounds like, but what's the difference between the djinn and fallen angels? I mean, Lucifer's band of minions that seem to be cast out of heaven with him.
It does. It sounds like the same type of story, doesn't it? I mean, fallen angels and the djinn, it sounds like the same. But the angels and the djinn were the first two beings that were supposed to be inhabiting the earth. And there's a quote that comes up right at the beginning of the documentary. And it says that in the beginning, there were angels and djinn, you know, and then came man. But the stories are similar to the fallen angels, and somebody else raised that same question to me, and it's pretty interesting the similarities that you see between these jinn and biblical stories. And also, if you go and look at the more demonic jinn, you get like the shaitan, and if you look into Christianity, you get Satan. So there's very similar things, and I don't know where those names originated from, but it's very strange that they are very similar to what we see in the West here.
Well, I know the jinn are notorious to be kind of this demonic force, this negative, malevolent energy that is very jealous of our existence. But some people have very innocuous meetings with the shadow people, like me. I mean, I had one walk through me. To me, I feel that honestly what I was seeing was the shadow, literally, of someone's former self, that this was all that was left of what they once were. It is the base primal piece that was left of them. In some of these instances and cases, I think we're seeing shadows walking between rooms at Rolling Hills Asylum, because we're watching kind of through a watery screen of time, and we're just seeing those flickering shadows appearing on the blinds of time right there for us. And it's nothing more than just kind of the de-evolution of the soul, or remnant of what was left of people after the best of them has moved on. Then you have the more dark and innocuous ones, much like the one we just covered on Theater of the Mind with the red glowing eyes. And some people have equated these beings with alien encounters. Have you heard many of the stories that kind of, I mean, if you look at alien encounters and abductions, many of them follow in that same deal, this large, spindly type shadowy figure that later turns out to be alien in nature.
Yeah, that's a good question, because one of the guys in the documentary did say that he woke up in his room to see three of these things standing at the foot of his bed. And all of a sudden, he had this nosebleed, a really bad nosebleed. And he was only a kid when this happened, but this guy was convinced that these were aliens. That's what he told us at the time. He believed they were aliens, even though they were black shadows. So, yes, people do associate these things with aliens. Some will say they're demons. Others will say they're ghosts. So I guess it depends on what people are kind of, you know, what's embedded into their belief system and things that they feel that it is, rather than what it truly is, which we're trying to find out. So it just depends on who you interview as to what they perceive it as, you know.
You have to have some insight to this yourself. What makes the most sense to you? Are they just shadows of beings long gone? Are they the remnants of what is left of our dark souls? Are they alien in nature? Are they elemental? Are they, you know, what do you think personally?
Well, personally, I think that they are. I believe that myself, they are a being, an entity in another form, an energy form. And, you know, in the space around us, we have, say, 100% of matter. Well, we can only perceive 5% of what's in any space. The rest science calls dark matter. So if you take this whole existence of this planet, all the wonderful things we have, all the creatures we have on this planet, that and you know, they all exist in the 5% that we can perceive, then what could lie in that 95% that we can't? Could there be other life forms, other energy-based life forms? I mean, you've got all sorts of frequency ranges flying through the walls, flying through buildings. We can't see them, but they're there. You've got like Wi-Fi signals, cell phone signals, TV signals. You can't see them, but they're in our space. And if you had the ability to tune yourself into a particular frequency, like a TV frequency, you could experience the effect of that wave, of that you know, that frequency range. But we can only see a slither of all that exists. So who's to say? I believe that, in my belief, I think that these things are another form of life that exists somewhere in that 95%. And momentarily, for some reason, people are able to see them, or maybe they're able to shift down frequencies and drop into our frequency range where we can actually perceive them with our five senses. But it's all interesting to look at. I mean, I can't say for sure with solid concrete proof what it is, but that's my opinion. I believe that they are life forms existing on another frequency.
What about physical touch? How many people report actually feeling or being touched by these entities?
We have a few in the film. The first one was assaulted by these in a sexual way, and she talks about that quite, you know, graphically about what happened to her in the film. And another woman, her name was Dawn, these things started plaguing her, these shadow entities. So she was out. It started, you know, her daughter and boyfriend saw one and it came to the house. And then she was out walking her dog. And this was at nighttime. And when she was out there, she looked over towards the woods, to the trees, and she saw this shadow being appear out of the trees. And then when she stared at it, it turned and it just ran. Just almost the same way as the one that I saw in the caves. It ran. I don't know why they run, but when they're seen, but it ran. And then the last experience that she had with that shadow being, or a shadow being just like it, she was laying on the sofa in her home, and it was late at night, so she was pretty tired. She had her arm up behind her head, and she kind of drifted off. And then she woke up to feel this thing grab her arm, and when she looked, it tried to drag her over the back of the sofa. And she quickly yanked her arm away from it and jumped up, and it was
Jesus.
Gone. Yes, it was gone.
What did she say that it felt like when it touched her? Was it icy? Was it, you know, was it firm and steely? Did she give any kind of physical tactile description?
Yeah, her exact description from her own testimony was that she felt every finger and her thumb, and it grabbed her hard. It grabbed her hard on her arm. And she said she felt it. She thought somebody had broken into her house and had grabbed her. It was that hard. Now, the bad thing about her situation was she actually got pretty distressed and she started crying on camera. And, you know, she got so distressed that we ended up cutting the interview. And then we spoke to her afterwards and we said, why are you getting so upset about this? What, you know, I mean, you've seen stuff. I've seen stuff. Why are you getting so upset? And she said to us that she believed that these things were going to kill her, that she said they're pure evil. And I said to her, don't say that. Just don't say things like that, because you can attract things into your life that, you know, if you start putting that out there. Anyway, she went away. And a while after she had completed that interview with us, we got a phone call to say that she was found dead in her apartment.
No. And,
yeah, she was found dead in her apartment. And if you we actually dedicated the whole film to her. And if you look at the date of birth, she was born on May 2nd and she died on May 1st. And she was actually found on her birthday. So she died and we could not find out the cause of death. My wife kept trying. We could not find out a cause of death. And the last my wife was told was it was natural causes. She was only 54 years old.
Does the interview with her appear in the documentary?
Yeah, there's an interview. You'll see her crying her eyes out in there. She freaks out.
Wow. Yeah. How does that impact you? I mean, that's unnerving right there, Paul. I mean, this woman had a fear that these things were going to get her, and then she died.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unnerving. Do you have a fear? You know, I mean, the new documentary just came out from Zach Bagans regarding his demon house. He actually put a disclaimer on the documentary to warn people that sometimes paranormal activity comes through electronics and that by even watching this, that could open you up. Do you think that there's any fear people should have by being open and researching these type of topics that it could eventually, you know, plague them?
Yeah, it's always possible. I mean, once you open yourself up to stuff like this, you become more receptive to it. And, you know, curiosity, you know, may bring something to you that you don't want. I mean, it's always possible. And, you know, always use caution when you start looking into these things. But don't try something silly like, you know, we've got a guy on there we interviewed and we put a disclaimer up. He was originally from Iraq, and he now lives here in the States. But this guy was an expert on a jinn, and he knows how to summon them. And in the documentary film, he actually says the prayer, the words to summon a jinn. Now, he only says it one time, but he says if you repeat this 100 times, he says the jinn, it's going to come. It's going to come to your house. So that's, you know, the thing. And when I was editing that up at nighttime on my own, you know, when you edit video, you listen to it over and over and over. I just said, listen, I don't want to listen to this thing 100 times just in case. So
right.
It was quite eerie. And people who, like I said, they look into this stuff, they may stumble across something like that and decide, oh, I want to try this just to see if it's hokey pokey. But you may actually open yourself up or bring something into your home or your life that you don't want.
You don't think it's kind of dangerous to include that prayer in a documentary like this, where people might feel the need or want to experiment with something like that?
It could be dangerous, but you know, we do put a disclaimer up there. Do not try to reenact or recreate this. And there are people foolish enough probably to try it. But we put a disclaimer there, and it was so interesting. I had to include it because I've never met somebody who knew this stuff, who had knowledge of this. And the story behind how this guy came into the documentary was as crazy as can be. I mean, I'm up in Maine. There's not that many people in Maine. And for me to be walking down in a 1.5 hour window on the streets of Portland, Maine, looking for people just to include in the documentary, we were planning to do some street interviews. And we were meant to be down there for half a day, but only had 1.5 hours after some mishaps. This guy walks across the street in front of me, and I see him, and I said, he looks like an interesting guy. So we ran over and grabbed him and said, hey, would you like to help us with a documentary? You know, he said, what's it about? And I said, it's about the jinn and shadow people. And he just looked at me and he says, I know everything there is to know about the jinn. So I just looked at the guy I was with, and I said, how the heck did we meet this guy? You know, what's the chances of that? So anyway, we start talking to him, and I quickly realized this guy does know a lot about the jinn. So I arranged to do a sit-down interview in the studio, and I went back down to Portland, rented a studio, and we did a nice sit-down interview with him, and he just unloaded so much stuff that is creepy. It's really creepy stuff. But on the other side of the coin, on this documentary, in the extras, we have included a prayer. It's an exorcism prayer that will you can play it if you have any problems in your home. And this prayer is supposed to cleanse the house if there are any evil or bad jinn in the home.
You know, it's interesting, though, right? What if looking at the documentary, right? What if in doing like an intention experiment, you know, people hear the prayer during the show and they're focused on it. Boy, you know, if 100 people or more are watching that documentary around the same time and all thinking that,
yeah,
that kind of leads a really kind of creepy possibility.
Yeah, all hell could break loose. It really could. And, you know, it's an interesting possibility. I don't think it will happen. I think that the circumstances in order to bring about a manifestation from that prayer are a lot more than just the prayer itself. There are things in there that he talks about, symbols that you must use, certain book you must use, candles and smoke and all sorts of things. So it wouldn't just be saying the prayer. It would be a number of things all together would probably create the right atmospheric for that to happen.
Gotcha. All right. That's good information. But I like that there is a prayer within the documentary as well that people can use to help clear their house.
Yes.
Let's talk about these different aspects as well with these creatures. You talked about one woman who met with a very untimely death because of what she believed, and people that were being attacked. When she said that she was being sexually accosted by this, was she talking just being touched inappropriately, or was she talking about full-on intercourse with this being?
Yeah, it was. It was full-on intercourse. That's the way she described it. It would actually physically open, you know, her legs, and it would do what it done, and then it would leave when it was done. And that was it. And she said that she was totally helpless while it was doing what it was doing to her. Her arms were pinned back. She couldn't move. And this thing was under the sheets on top of her doing what it was doing.
Oh, hell no. It's time to burn that house down.
I know. Leave while you can. But these are the types of stories we heard, you know.
Right. Is your wife ever unnerved by the work that you do and the research you do with these documentaries?
Yeah, she doesn't. She does. She gets freaked out, but she likes it. I don't know what it is. People, I always say when people go to the theme parks, where are the biggest queues? They're at the roller coasters. People like a bit of a thrill, a bit of
right.
A, yeah, so she, although she, it scares her and freaks her out, she likes it. You know, people, they want to hear the stories, and they get into it. When her friends come around, they all want to hear the stories, and so people love it. They love to be scared, but it's not funny, but it's interesting about the human nature. People love the thrill, and I don't know why, but they do.
Well, talking about human nature, how do you separate the fact from the fiction? The real people that have had experience as opposed to people that are maybe injecting themselves for their 15 minutes of fame?
You can normally tell, because a person normally will come to you and they'll say, this particular thing happened to me, and they're very adamant about it, and they're very specific. They don't meander. They don't wander. And then you'll get someone who'll come to you and they'll say, I've had alien abduction, I've seen ghosts, I've had this, I've had that. And they reel off 100 things, and their aunts have all done this, and their grandfathers have done that. And then you just say, well, is that person for real? And I'm not saying I shouldn't believe them, but I tend to find the more genuine ones are the people that came and say, this happened to me on this date. I was fully awake when it happened to me. I know what I saw. And they're not saying anything else about anything, you know. They're not going on about 100 different things that have happened to them.
Has anybody suggested that if you see them, you should try to speak to them?
No, nobody has said that you should try and speak to them. In fact, you know, when I saw what I saw down in the caves, and this also goes to maybe what this woman saw the second time around, Dawn, who met an unfortunate death. But when I saw what I saw down the cave, it kind of looked like it was scared, meaning that when it saw us or heard, I don't know if it actually saw us. I shouldn't say that, because it reacted to something, and I don't know whether it reacted to the sound wave of the scream or it actually saw us, but it ran. It just ran like it was really scared. And then she said when she saw it out in the backyard, Dawn, when she was walking the dog, she said she saw it, and as soon as it saw her, it ran. So I don't know, you know, are there jinns or shadow people that are scared, you know, as well when they see humans? I don't know, but it's a question worth asking.
What do you make? Okay, the majority of them are shadow people, are these humanoid figures. Then there are some that have claims of these red glowing eyes, or sometimes even almost like a green glowing eyes. And then you've got the Hat Man. Is the Hat Man believed to be kind of the enforcer or the mob leader of these shadow people?
Yeah, if the Hat Man is the one you don't want coming to your house, according to everything I've looked into and seen and heard, that's the one you don't want coming to your house. He's like the,
what do we know about
head honcho?
Right, he's the head honcho, so he dresses more dapper than all the rest of the shadow people. But why Hat Man? I mean, why do you think that it would make itself more prevalent and wear a hat or have this hat-like shape on its head?
Yeah, that's a good question, because everybody asks, why a hat? Well, one of the reasons, and we cover it in the documentary, is these things are known to shape-shift. They're known to take different forms. So you'll see a humanoid, and it will shift down into something else. Jinns are known to shape-shift. So it could be that. And it's been said that when the jinn shapeshift, they don't always get it right. And sometimes there's a deformity, and most of the time the deformity is in the top part of the jinn, the head. So a hat would be an easy way to figure that out, to sort of cover over any deformity or miscalculation when it's shapeshifting. But also, the hats are a symbol of authority. They're a status. And we don't know whether these things are shapeshifting into...
Doesn't it sound a little silly, though, Paul, when you think about it, that there it's a shadow being who traverses parallel universes, alternate realities, or whatever it does to be here, but to hide its maybe horned head or pointy head or whatever, it wears a hat. If its idea is to kind of terrorize you, I would think it would want to be seen in its most natural form. That would be what's going to really get you unnerved.
Exactly. If it has a natural form, I mean, if it was an energy-based being, it may not even have a true natural form that we could even perceive. I mean, it could just be, you don't know what it could be, but it does sound silly. But these are just some of the theories that are floating out there. Nobody knows for sure why a hat. We just don't know for sure. What we do know is that people are seeing these things and they're all reporting these hats. And it's like, well, how come this is happening, you know? So these ideas that I'm putting forward are just theories that have been sort of garnished along the way. Nobody knows for sure.
Now, you said nobody has told you to try to engage them, but have people spoken to the shadow people? Have they spoken back? And when they do communicate, does it seem to be more of a telepathic message as opposed to a spoken word message?
In the interviews I did, I never met one person that actually said that they communicated with them, but I have heard stories. There's a story from Rosemary Ellen Guiley where one of these shadow people communicates with some guide. She's telling a story of someone else, and there's a communication back and forth between the guy and this shadow being. But I've never heard of anybody, you know, that I know or interviewed speaking to them telepathically or physically.
That seems like a strange aspect of this as well. I mean, so many of us, if we saw a ghost, would want to speak to the ghost. Why do you think people don't try to talk to a shadow person? Is it just that fear?
Yeah, it could be just sheer terror. I mean, if one stepped in front of you right now in your room, you would be lost for words, I think. Some people...
Not me, Paul. I'm a radio professional. I just want to sit down and engage him in a meaningful conversation.
Exactly. No, some people can stomach that, but a lot of people would just be just astonished. They would be taken aback. They just wouldn't know what to do. And I think a lot of people would just freeze. It would just be out of sheer panic. They would just freeze. And I don't know, maybe afterwards they said, oh, I wish I would have said something. But I think most people's reaction would be just to freeze and just to watch the thing.
But isn't it interesting that there are a lot of people that report seeing these things in their room and their response is just to roll over and go to sleep? Now, Paul, if you woke up and I was standing at the end of your bed, would you just look at me and go, huh, and then just roll over and go to bed? Why do you think people are so kind of at ease in some cases with these beings and will just go to sleep?
I don't know. Maybe these people... I haven't heard of people just rolling over and going to sleep. But if somebody did that, I would say that person maybe was lucid. They weren't fully awake or conscious. You know, they maybe just woke up and thought they saw something and then rolled over.
I wonder if the fact is, well, no, a lot of the people I've spoken to have woken up or they've been in their room and they've heard something and they move and they see these shadow people. And once they get past that initial, oh, shit, they kind of calm down and they're like, oh. Okay, and then they just go to sleep, which that lends to me more of the idea of maybe alien intervention, because doesn't that sound like it? You know, they use those cloaking devices in many people's stories where, you know, all you can remember is an owl, you know, or maybe these shadowy figures. It's easier for your brain to see that than to fathom what you actually watched. And I wonder in these cases if it is some kind of hypnotic or mind control, because, again, I don't understand how people can wake up and see one or two or three of these things surrounding their bed and just kind of, once they get past that initial shock and awe, just roll over and go to sleep. But we get a lot of reports of that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, each to their own. Some people will react differently. I personally wouldn't be just rolling over. I'd be running at the thing, you know. There's no way I'd roll over. I would just freak out. But maybe there's people that battle hard and they're either under some, like you say, some sort of mind control. They're in a different state of, you know, lucidness or consciousness, or they're just fearless. And you know, it's one of the three. I don't know which it is, but I never met anybody that just did that.
Well, as we heard in the Theater of the Mind as well, here you've got a person that witnessed this being seeming to emanate from the mirror, and it would be in a humanoid shape in the mirror, and then it would kind of turn into that smoky column that would come out of the mirror and then kind of reassemble itself, and then it would leave through mirrors. Are mirrors a big part of the shadow world and shadow people as well?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I never included that at all in a documentary. And there was something that was said by this guy I told you that I interviewed in Portland, who said he knew everything about the djinn. And it's quite creepy, actually, because I tried it and it kind of unnerved me. He said if you wanted to see if there was a djinn attached to you, you could do this by looking into a mirror. And the way I'll explain it to you. I don't know if your listeners are going to want to do this, but he said to me, if you go to a mirror into a room where it's dimly lit, so light maybe one tea light candle, put it down on, say, like a bathroom counter sink in the darkness, and then just stare at the mirror, stare at your face, lock the gaze, stare into your own eyes, and keep staring and staring and staring. And he says that if you do that for about, you know, 5 minutes or so, you'll start to see your face shift. The form of your face will start to shift, and you'll see different faces start appearing. And I tried it once, and I started seeing stuff, and I stopped, because I don't know, was it my eyes just playing tricks on me? But I didn't like what I was seeing. And this is what he said to do. So I just followed his instruction, and I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm seeing stuff. So maybe right. That's something you should try, Dave.
Well, we have. We've done, at a lot of these events that we host, we do what's called the psychomantium room. And we will have a light, you know, very low light set up with a candle flickering with a mirror. And people have witnessed their faces aging in the mirror, or seeing loved ones' faces appearing over their faces, shadowy figures. And now, you know, it's really flippin' chilling. I told the story on one of our Theater of the Minds. I'll see if I can find that audio to share with you, Paul, if you're interested in hearing it. But one of the stories that I experienced at the Palmer House Hotel included this shadowy figure standing behind the woman. She refused to go down into the basement to do the experiment on her own. And the whole idea is you're supposed to go by yourself. And she wanted to go so badly, I accompanied her, and I sat on a chair below her and off to the side so she couldn't see me in the mirror. And as the experiment progressed, when I turned away for a little bit to let my eyes kind of adjust and I turned back, I could see her shadow behind her. And as I was staring at it, I was trying to figure out, I'm like, well, wait a minute. Shouldn't the shadow be falling against the floor? Why am I seeing this? And I kind of leaned forward from my sitting position, and the shadow bent at the waist and put its face right in front of mine and then stood back up. And now you're saying that maybe that's a sign that this person has an attachment. Yes, and at first I was just thinking it was something in the basement that was there behind her, but now I'm wondering if it was something that was more attached to her.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what he said. He was adamant about it. I've got it on tape. He said, you know, that's what you do if you want to see if you've got a djinn attachment. And another thing about mirrors, when I was a kid, one of my cousins, he was killed in an unfortunate incident. And when I went to the house, this was on my dad's side, so they're from the Caribbean. And when I went to the house where my cousin lived, at the wake, they had all the mirrors in the house turned backwards. They were all flipped around backwards. And I said to my dad, you know, why have they turned all the mirrors backwards? This was at my aunt's house. And he said, because the dead are supposed to be able to come back through the mirrors. And my cousin, they didn't want that to happen to him. They wanted him to go over to the other side. So they flipped all the mirrors back so he couldn't come back through. And that's something that I always remembered as a kid. But, you know, I've never seen anyone else do that. But there's something about mirrors. There is something about mirrors.
Right. Well, right. I mean, the mirror, the idea that there was something that people have seen and witnessed for themselves and have experienced through funeral parlors, I know they used to cover and cloak the mirrors at night as well, so that if there were spirits, they wouldn't travel in and out through the mirrors. And I guess that the mirrors, if they're facing one another as well, can have a very powerful sense to them.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Because when I was a kid, I don't know, maybe you've done it as a kid too. You used to get two mirrors, big ones, and put them side by side. And it was like a loop of infinity. You could look, if you kind of look at an angle, you could see millions of mirrors going. It seemed like on forever and ever. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a looping reflection and it just bounces reality. And these are light waves. These are waves and they're going backwards and forwards, generating more images of the reality that we're in now. Maybe that's something, you know, there too, that may unlock something.
Very well could be. What a chilling experience. What are you hoping people get from this documentary?
Well, the documentary basically, in order to cover everything there is about jinn and shadow people, it would take a series. It would take there's too much information. What I've done is basically glossed over a lot of things. So given people an introduction and then a bit of history, some experiences, some information about possibilities, what it could be, expert opinions. What I'm basically trying to do is to get people to look at this and then, open their minds to this, the possibility of this, because in the West, we don't, although we, in this network talk about it, a lot of people won't, because they have a fear of being called crazy, lunatics, whatever. People don't, in the West, there's a lot of people still that just look down on you if you start talking about this stuff. And in the East, they're more open to stuff like the jinn. They're absolutely about it. If you have a jinn problem, you can go and get help with it. You can talk to somebody about it, even if it's nothing, even if it's just your imagination. You can still have that conversation rather than bottling it all up. And the film basically opens up to show, hey, these are normal human experiences. Not everybody has them, but a lot of people have them, and you should be able to talk about them openly in society without being called crazy. And if you go to a doctor and tell him you've seen these shadow things, they may, they may prescribe you something. But what we try to do is show that there are people having these experiences. It's not something you should be ashamed of. It's something that you should be able to talk to openly, get help if it's troubling you, and not worry about people, ridiculing you or calling you crazy. And then towards the end of the documentary, we provide, testimonies from these people, how they felt that they were finally able to express these experiences, to talk about them. And then the documentary basically just goes on to, let people know that, although we don't have a definite answer, the possibility is there, and we should just basically, listen to people when they give out these experiences rather than ridicule them, because one day we may be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that these entities do exist.
Paul Tate, it has been great catching up with you again on this. Are shadow people lurking in your bedroom, folks? Check out the documentary for yourself, darkelementfilms.com. We'll have a link up to that so that you can find it more easily. And watch the documentary. Let me know what you guys think. And tell me about your experiences. If you've had encounters with shadow people, the red-eyed shadow people, the hat man, if you've already sent in those stories, you don't need to resend them, as we've probably already read them in the air. But if any of you newer listeners have had experiences, we'd love for you to share them. And remember, if you write it as a clean narrative, I might be able to use it for an upcoming Theater of the Mind like the one you heard today. Paul, thank you so much for joining us again. It was great catching up with you.
You're welcome, Dave. Thank you.
That's it for this week, kids. We'll be back again next week with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. And don't forget, I'm hosting Coast to Coast AM tonight and tomorrow night, so you'll be able to tune in and hear some more chilling aspects of the supernatural. So check it out at coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com to find stations and times in your area to listen along, or just go stream it live from our home studios in St. Cloud at knsiradio.com. That's knsiradio.com. We'll be back again with you next week. Until then, be kind, be nice, and love one another. We'll talk to you again right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.